Malcolm Blight leads off our Thursdays. The Mind of Blight is a beautiful place to be, particularly in grand final week. Malcolm, welcome.
Good morning, Jared. Yes, it seems to have taken forever to get here, but bye.
Be gentle with us in Melbourne. Anything could happen at the moment. So, yes, bye. Hey, so let's talk a little bit of grand final heritage before we zero in what's in front of us. You played in five and you coached five. When you think back over them, and there is plenty to choose from, how big is grand final day in your life?
Yeah, I'm watching you last night, and those were captains of both teams, Max Gorn and Marcus Bonapella. Yeah, it's absolutely exciting, but you don't know the outcome. So there's this trepidation about you. Is this going to happen for us? And I heard someone say, you've got a 50-50 chance of winning, but when you're sitting in the chair waiting for it all to happen, I reckon you think sometimes you've got 25%. 25% evaporates before you start playing the game. You think, oh, and your mind wanders, oh, no, what if we lose? Oh, no. So there's a whole lot of fight going on in the brain, I can assure you.
So they are different. They're different to any other game.
Well, the game is not different, but the mindset is. And those that quickly get over that, the guys that settle first, and a lot of guys, you'll see them just sitting there and they just take it all in their stride. Others are on edge. And it's those edgy ones that are probably going to play either very good or not so good. You know, I mean, you try and keep it as normal as possible in the most abnormal week of your sporting life.
Yeah. Do they live with you, Malcolm? Do you have memories that are vivid? Do you have memories that are haunting?
Yeah, not so much haunting. I sometimes wish, and this is not because you're there or Geelong supporters, but I mean, if I could have been involved in one at Geelong, that would have been exciting, you know, when you get beaten in three. You know, the other two, we played pretty good teams. Sometimes running second is as good as you possibly can do, but it just seems to me the incrimination of everybody when you lose a grand final is so over the top, it's unbelievable. I've said this before I even played in one, watching in Adelaide, where the two teams, this is one of the great things about the game, the two teams in Adelaide go to the brewery and they paint the chimney, one with 2 feet and the other one with 1 foot. But they actually acknowledge everything that happened in that game, that someone got beat, but someone had to make a contest. So I think it's over the top. First of all, for the winner, you know, you might win by a kick, as we've all seen, and they're lauded as the greatest team in history, and the others are useless. It's a bizarre thing that happens after losing a grand final.
So let's work back through a few of your specifics. So winning the first flag, and you had the privilege of doing it twice, the first time as a player with North Melbourne and the second time as a coach for Adelaide. So there's a bit of, in North's case, there's a bit of that ending the drought that Melbourne is living through. How momentous do you recall it being?
Yeah, I've said many times, other people have had too. 50 years they had to wait for that. And I was the new boy on the block, really, you know. So I was an observer. I mean, I was excited as hell because I've been there a couple of years, but I was really observer of the people of North Melbourne. I mean, I can't believe the tears that you saw at the ground. Every function we went to seemed like the functions went on forever.
Yep.
I mean, the excitement was just enormous. But the tears of the people that hadn't seen anything in 50 years was the thing that actually struck me.
And then in Adelaide, so it's not as long a wait, but it's the whole of state endeavour. How big was it?
It's still big, though.
Yes.
it's still massive. You know, you walk around Adelaide and, oh, gee, thanks for 97, 98, Lottie. I must say, it happens, if it doesn't happen daily, it happens every second day somewhere where you are. And you know what? I never got a kick in it. I just never got a kick in them. But perhaps you are trying to help them around the park. But so it's big. I mean, and that's what the great thing about the game now, and the AFL being the AFL, is that we've all got a reference point. You know, the Swans have got a reference point. The Bulldogs have got a reference point. And we probably need one for Melbourne, and we probably need one for St Kilda too. You know, and we need one for Fremantle. Somewhere, hopefully, that can happen. And it's just a better game if everyone can share in it. And I know it sounds funny. We all want to dominate when we get there. But when you look from the outsider's point of view, it is always very, very nice now to look back and somewhere in recent history.
Yeah, the droughts are too long and too painful in a way. So in amongst the highs that you had, Malcolm, there's 78 where you're the Brownlow medalist and you're left cast through injury on the bench while the team loses. How is there despair attached to that? What are your recollections of 78?
Ah, dear mate. Yes. In the centre bouncer ran in a young Hawthorn player called Richard Walter. Just bumped into him and my boot got stuck. You know, that whole black mud there, it was hard as rock. And I just, that was the grind gone. And I tried a lot of juice, as we called it in those days, but it just, all it did was numb my whole right-hand side. I couldn't, so I was off. So what do you do? I mean, it's the most useless I've ever felt in my life as a sports person. You can't do a thing about it. And then the great Stan Owls came along. He pinged his hamstring. So the two of us in those days, no interchange, of course, and only two reserves. You know, we virtually played two down for the rest of the game. So it was such a high the week before with the medal and on the Monday. And then to actually, it was the only game I ever got injured in 22 finals, I think I played. It was the only time I got injured. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Yep. The helplessness attached to that, I imagine, is enormous. So when you're a coach, do you second guess anything years on? Does your mind, do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, I wonder if I could have done that in 92? Or was there a move to be made in 89, halfway through the third quarter?
Yes, there was. In all of that. It took me a while to actually look back on it. Once you try and do it, one of the things I learned was that you can't do anything about it as a player, as an administrator, as a supporter, as a coach. I mean, all you try and do is pick the eyes out of it. I think sometimes, you know, you can go overboard with trying to analyse it because you know exactly what happens is those two teams will never play again.
Yep.
Exactly the same teams. Someone retires, someone's injured. You can look at it back in history. I tried to do it for a while and I got, it was just stupid looking back because it never happens. So that vibe on that day with those 44 players or 46 players now will never happen again. So what you do is waste a lot of energy. Now, as a coach, you can look back and think, ah, oh, gee whiz, I'll remember that for next year. I'll do that. And you might write a list of four or five or six things. But, you know, going overboard with the players, I found it was just too many old wounds come up,
yep.
Particularly after you've lost. And when you win, you don't even look at it. You don't need to.
Yeah. So you did some pretty great stuff in 97 and 98 from the coach's box. I think that's broadly acknowledged. Do you feel a sense of satisfaction going, yeah, that was a good one for grand final day?
Between me and the gatepost, yeah, probably. Yeah. But, you know, you don't get out on the soapbox and say it. But, you know, because all you're trying to do as a coach, I never thought I'd ever win a game, and I think I've said this to you before, what you've got to do is try and help a player obviously do something different or get better on the day. And it's usually up to the player to actually accept that and do it. So all you are is a catalyst for a thought. And hopefully some come off.
What was your best one? Go on.
I think in the 97 grand final, it involved two people called Simon Goodwin, believe it or not,
yep.
And Darren Jarman. You know, we were obviously down at half time. And so the trick was I loved Darren Jarman around the ball and also loved him up forward. You know, he wasn't a fumbler. So what I did, I put him in the centre bounce at the start of the third quarter and made him run forward. He was actually playing full forward. Simon Goodwin came off the back of the square, which started all this. Everyone thinks they do it all now, and plus one and seventh and all that. You know, the 97 grand final, not a lot of people had seen this before. So Simon was actually the midfielder. So Simon came in unannounced and had seven or eight touches in the third quarter. And we know what Darren Jarman did, running free into the forward line with no one on him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty great. The Goodwin conversation is it's so great to see history repeating. So he referenced it the other night as what you did with him, he's doing with Jack Bowie. So he'd played six games in the 97 home and away season and you bring him in for the final series. What do you remember that you saw in a young fellow to bring him in to shape the pointy end of the year?
Well, actually, he actually played the first game of the year in 97. We played Brisbane, I think, from memory, and got wounded. I call it wounded. He got injured. I can't remember now if it was a groin or thigh, but something that kept him out for some time. You know, he seemed to be getting injured. We had a lot of injuries, and exactly what it was now, you know, not 100%, but something like that. Certainly a leg high, leg injury. So he was actually, he didn't play. So it's pretty hard to get a kick and if you're wounded. So it was a gradual process with him to come back in towards the later end of the year. And, you know, of course, I think he came in, I looked it up actually, around 14 or 15.
Yep.
And never looked back from there. So, and his win rate was enormous that year. I think he played in 9 winning teams out of 10 games. So he was, I mean, already he'd become a little key part, although a very young part, of a very young group. We had 7 under 22 in that team that ended up winning another one, which was great. But yeah, I mean, he was very key towards the end of the year.
And his first 2 years of footy are those premiership years. So what sort of a bond do you feel with Simon?
Look, it's like with all those guys and anyone that's been involved in a premiership, I think anywhere in the competition from under 12s upwards, you know, you sort of remember lots of stuff, and because it's done at the senior level, you know, we do catch up for reunions and you see them around the streets, and, you know, and it's just a really nice feeling. You know, I have it lucky enough with North Melbourne and also with the Adelaide Footy Club. But it doesn't mean, and this is what annoys me a bit, I'm going to a reunion next week for the Woodville Football Club. Now, we have a reunion once a year for all the guys that played at Woodville all those years ago. Now, we didn't win a lot. We did win the toss a few times, I must say. But we didn't. But it's just great to catch up with those mates. And I think that that's the part of the sport that everyone forgets. You think, I mean, the premierships are glorious and gorgeous and, you know, great to catch up with them. But I think we often forget, and that's why I love what I do with Woodville, is that you catch up with mates that you grew up with and played with in those early years. Don't dismiss that, because that is part of your life, and carry it on. Someone should take the banner with that, and we do have that at Woodville.
We're in the mind of Blighty, the special week that is grand final week. If you would like to pose a question to our legend of the game, please feel free to do so. 1300 736 736 as we bring things down towards the Demons and the Dogs. Malcolm Blight is for the official AFL Select Footy Stars collector cards.
I just need to be myself. Like, we want our players to be and execute the things that I do from a week to week. There's no question you learn off coaches, though. You know, Blighty's someone for me that I learn a lot off in the big games, you know, about making sure you keep that enjoyment, keep the environment light, where they're still enjoying what they do, knowing there's a pressure there and it is normal, but really soaking the whole atmosphere in and then getting to work and being as competitive as you can. You know, my role within that is to be a really stable influence around the playing group this week. You know, walk into the dinner room, have a smile, engage as normal, and you know, love our training and love what we do, and that's what I'm going about doing.
Simon Goodwin with his reflections of what he took from Malcolm Blight in a week such as this. Blighty, what did you try to project as the coach in these grand final weeks?
Yeah, I just go back to that story, obviously, with the Crows. I'll just tell you, similarly at Geelong, but isn't it funny? You're great when you win and they're great when they work out. If you don't, you use it. Quite interesting. I was me, and I think you're probably, anyone that knows me over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years in footy, I've probably always been me. But anyhow, what actually happened was we're sitting at breakfast, Sunday morning breakfast, before we went to, you know, that mid-morning breakfast before we went to the MCG in 97 playing St Kilda. And, mate, the room was like a dead morgue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you walk in and it was just, no one was talking, no one was doing anything. I mean, you could just see everyone so uptight. I couldn't believe it. So I just walked in and said, boys, for goodness sake, let's come on, someone talk, someone say something. Hey, you're not going to a funeral, you're going to a footy game, like, you know, whatever. And a whole lot of things from that. From after that, it was just like, and Andrew McLeod told me after, he said, Blighty, everyone was bloody crapping themselves, but thank goodness what you did, you know. And he actually wrote it in his book called The Black Crow. Andrew wrote a book, and a lot of people have said that, but I was just being me. Now, I would have said that at Geelong as well. Well, how come the other one didn't work? You know what I mean? It's all in hindsight, isn't it, when you do coaching things? It's quite interesting, actually. And I remember in 1989, the great Alan Jeans talked about the battle of the tackles or something like that. The Hawthorn boys talked about it. You know, he became a superstar coach because of it. They won by a kick. You know, if it didn't, no one would ever mention again. It's quite funny, man.
History's written by the victors, the conquerors, Malcolm.
Yes, that's right.
Andrew's in Whittlesea with a question for you, Blighty. Welcome, Andrew.
Yeah, good morning, Jared. Good morning, Malcolm. Malcolm, how do you
How do you go about changing the mindset of a player that's played a couple of average finals games and starting to get a reputation? And I refer to Gary Rowan. And how did you change your mindset after getting dragged in the 77 grand final and then come back into replay and played a major part in North's premiership side?
Yeah, I'll answer the first one first, because it was what was done there was for one poor kick. I just missed the inside of a kick going back to the middle of the ground. I should have had a shot at goal. I thought it was a harsh call. I didn't say anything. I didn't whinge. I caught my lot in life. And I reckon the footy god helped me through that, because it was such a stupid call from the coach. And that's fair enough. I mean, I can have that. I still have that feeling all these years later. So actually, I was in pretty good nick prior to that. One, you know, we all make mistakes, and to actually the coach then to focus on one, I thought was way, way over the top. I've done it as a coach myself too, and sometimes you burn people, but I got a second chance, and thank goodness got, you know, a lot of places got the votes in the replay, because I wasn't in that bad a form. And the other one, I just forgotten what I said now. I was talking about myself.
The players who don't have a great finals record, how do you overcome it?
Yeah, how do you overcome that? You play another one. And I'll tell you why. Darren Jarman, in 1991, playing for Hawthorn in a winning team, hardly got a kick. You know, everyone bagged him and ragged him. Get over it. It's only one game. I do never buy into that. What you do is look at a player's career over a whole career and then start to look at it. You know, if he gets in the finals for the next 2 or 3 years and doesn't play, there'll be one he played all right in. I'll bet you. It's not as bad as that. It's never as bad as it seems, because it'll be roughly the way he plays during the year. He plays in a very awkward spot called forward pocket. Try that for size. I played there a couple of times in a grand final, mate. It's not much fun. You don't get a lot of goes at it. So I wouldn't write him off yet.
Andrew, thank you. Sam is in Hoppers Crossing. Welcome, Sam.
Good morning, Jared, and good morning, Falcon. I'm just wondering, with the enormous amount of pressure that's on both teams, with Melbourne not having won a grand final since 57 years, and the Bulldogs would like to add number 3 trophy to their cabinet, there must be an enormous amount of pressure on both the teams, and there must be an enormous amount of mental fatigue setting in as well. I'm just wondering, to what extent does a player play the game starting from, let's say, Thursday night, and by the time they actually front up on Saturday evening, that they're already exhausted, having played the game in their head? What do you do to try and sort of combat and help them through that sort of journey?
Yeah, no, it's the tough question, isn't it? How do you know what everyone's thinking? You know, when you're lying in bed at night time and you start playing the game in your head, you know, somehow or other you've got to have a trigger point. Now, hopefully, because you've played some big games during the year, and like they're all big games really, but some, you know, one playing two or two playing four, you know, if you're playing the 18th team sometimes, you probably don't as worry as much. But that be that as it may, you've got to learn that during the year. If you haven't done that during the year, you're probably going to struggle to do a grand final eve. So all those things should have been set in place. And particularly the last 4 weeks, as the final series comes in, start putting those sorts of thoughts as a coaching group. Get someone in if you can't do it yourself. Start putting those thoughts in the players' heads as we go along. So, you know, there should have been rehearsals on this, not just one rehearsal for the grand final. Keep doing that and you'll get over it. And there's lots of tricks you can do. There's lots of things you can write, lots of things you can read, and lots of people you can talk to. And if you're professional, which they should be now, all those things should be tried.
Terrific question, Sam. Good on you. So, Blighty, what are the biggest determining factors for this grand final in your mind?
We talk about this probably nearly every week, but the midfields are two. They're the best two midfields going around. I think we all acknowledge that. They all run deep. It is an amazing thing. The Bulldogs haven't quite got the speed of a Petrarca and Oliver, probably. However, they do have a Bontempelli and a Treloar who, you know, can go on the outside and inside. But I just think that the quick hands of the Bulldogs can set up play, whereas the quick legs, generally speaking, of the Melbourne team, they're going to be slightly different in the way they approach it. You know, because Petrarca and Oliver can get their own ball and get going or get on their bike. So I'll be fascinated with those. Now, and I'd suggest neither of them are going to give ground. And I think the average winning margin, I looked at it last year, I think was about 38 points in the grand final for the last 20 years. I just can't see one team not believing they still can't win this. So I think we could get a clinker because of that. And, you know, I'm tipping probably under 3 goals, which in today's footy is not very much.
So you'd nominated the Bulldogs right at the start of the year. You made Melbourne earn their stripes. Where do you land on the last day?
I admire the Western Bulldogs and what they've done, Luke Beveridge has done, and the whole team's done. But the heart rules the head sometimes, doesn't it? It's an emotional game, Jared. I think we all know that. And I think, you know, mainly because, you know, obviously following Simon Goodwin's career, and, you know, to see him get a chance on the big stage would be a wonderful thing for him. And I wouldn't decry the Bulldogs anything. So I've actually, at the last moment, I'm jumping ship off the Bulldogs. Sorry to all those Bulldog supporters. But as you know, if you've got, you know, four children, you love them all equally. Well, you know, a little bit of me is Simon in him. So I've got to go that way for the heart.
There's a lovely text that's come through, Malcolm, while we've been talking. Is Norm Smith coached Ron Barassi? Ron Barassi coached Malcolm Blight. Malcolm Blight coached Simon Goodwin. Is there a nugget passed down that you think Goody will take into Saturday that could be traced back through that lineage to Norm Smith?
I've got my fingers crossed for him. I mean, Luke can't be greedy, can he, Luke Beveridge? He's already got one. You know, they're hard to win. He's already proved he's a fantastic coach. So it'll be nice for Simon to join that crew. And I agree with you. It's a wonderful lineage, isn't it? And obviously, and I met Norm Smith. What a great man he was. And obviously, Brass, we talked about, as hard as he was, as great as he was. But, yeah, it would be nice to pass the baton on.
So just as we wind up, Blighty, Michael Voss is likely on the cusp of the Carlton job, although there is the risk, I think, of jumping the mark here. Did you have the 2 years with him at Channel 10? Did you work together?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, at one stage, he was asked about the Gold Coast Suns job, which I was going to be a bit of a mentor in the background, which I ended up doing with the Guy McKenna. But, yeah. So that was a long time ago, yeah.
Would you love to see him get another go at it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got no doubt. No doubt at all. I'm telling you, you know, to do it the second time, you learn so much. And you know what you learn a lot about? Adversity. Adversity for yourself. And I heard Simon on your show saying, you know, you had to change a little bit. He was getting too uptight. Getting uptight's fine. There's got to be a time and place for that. But you've actually got to put some pleasure back into it as well when you're coaching. Because that's the reason they play, because they love playing.
Blighty, it's one of the great privileges of my professional life that we get to chat every Thursday morning. My favourite moments are when you stop me and say, I haven't told you this before, and there's that moment of going, I wonder in which direction we're going. So thanks for being part of it every Thursday, and I know there are thousands of people who tune in to hear your thoughts and to delve into the mind of Blighty. Enjoy the grand final.
And you too, Jared. Thank you.
Legend of the game, Malcolm Blight. Brad in Sunbury. So great to hear Blighty speak. He was my hero as a kid in Adelaide. I still remember watching Woodville games at Woodville Oval as a 10-year-old. And Blighty was something like 36 years of age, kicking 7 and 8 goals every week. Absolute legend. And Graham in Mentone, quoting Blighty, I love Darren Jarman in the middle. I love Darren Jarman up forward. So Malcolm came up with a play that had Jarman do both. More Malcolm, please.